There's so much we can learn about ourselves through our relationship with nature because nature is what we are. Quantum physics shows us that everything in nature is vibrating at a molecular level, including you. So when it comes down to it, not only are you nature, but your music. And your frequency is an important part of this beautiful cosmic symphony. Hi, I'm Courtney Cole, and this is the Love Freak podcast where we remember who we really are and what we've come to this planet to create. It's here we make a choice. Love or fear. It's here we choose to vibrationally realign ourselves with the truth of our essence, love, 528 hertz, the love frequency, which therefore allows us to realign with conscious healing, authenticity, and creativity. Don't freak out. This is your true nature.
Hey guys, welcome to the Love Freak podcast. I hope that wherever you are, wherever you're listening right now, may it be in your car, cleaning your house, maybe you're on a lovely walk right now. I hope that you are healthy and that you are happy and that you are doing well. Man, what a treat I have for you today. You guys, you know what a spiritual and musical nerd I am. And I assume that if you're listening to this right now, that you might have that in you as well. but I have the pleasure, the true pleasure today of talking with Maya Stein. Maya is a freelance writer, and she has been for more than 20 years. She's self-published 5 books, and she's written hundreds and hundreds of beautiful poems. I found Maya a while ago, actually online, and signed up for her 10-line Tuesdays, where she sends out a 10-line poem every week straight to your email. And they're so awesome. And they're spiritual to me. I don't know if that's necessarily how she intends them to be, but that's how I take them. They're just so honest, and they're so present and just intentional in the moment. So I had to have her on to chat about spirituality, to talk about creativity, and where and how they intersect. You're also going to get to hear one of her amazing poems that's inspired me deeply. So I'm really excited for you to hear that. But this is a conversation that you are going to be thinking about for a very, very long time. It's just so beautiful, so good. So let's tune in. Maya, it is so great to meet you face to face, sort of, and have you on the show today.
Torso to torso, right?
Yes, exactly. Where are you coming to us from?
I live in Midcoast, Maine, so I'm all the way across the country from you.
Wow, it feels so far. You feel so far away. Mm-hmm. Is that where you were born and raised?
It's not. I moved here with my wife about a year and a half ago. It's hard to really say where I'm from because I was actually born in Canada, and then we as a family moved to Israel for 5 years, and then moved to Virginia, and then California, and then New England, and then I lived in San Francisco for like 16 years. So I feel like I've kind of bopped all around, and I usually say I'm from New England because I spent kind of my formative, adolescence here. So
sure.
That's what I say.
What brought you to Israel?
Well, I think my father sort of had this, I think there was a period of time where he felt like, as a Jewish family, we had a kind of responsibility to populate the country, I wasn't born there or anything, but just to kind of have the Israel experience. And we did.
Totally.
I mean, we lived in a kibbutz, or several of them actually. And my first language was Hebrew. And I think a lot of my, I have a lot of very strong formative memories from that time. So I'm really grateful that I got to live there. It's the source of a lot of memories and formative experiences.
Wow. Your first language was Hebrew.
Yeah, I actually, so we lived in a kibbutz where there were several nationalities of volunteers, and there were Argentinian volunteers, and there were Dutch volunteers and American volunteers. And so I kind of absorbed like this buffet of languages when I was learning how to speak, really. And I didn't really talk for the first couple of years of my life. So when I actually started speaking, my parents have said, it just sort of came out as gibberish. And it was this conglomerate of these languages, which only I understood, of course. So it took a while to kind of, to sort of like, distinct, get to understand what I was saying. But it is kind of it's interesting to think about origin stories, I think, in terms of why we do what we do. And I think one of my origin stories is the fact that I spoke a language that nobody understood. And it took a long time to be understood. And so I think as a writer, I see the thread there of like continuing. It's like there's something in me that persists in wanting to be understood and wanting to make myself clear. And so I see the relationship between this secret language that I had and what, you know, or this, you know, really strange kind of confection of language that I absorbed and what I'm doing now.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you didn't speak much as a child, and now I feel like you have so much to say, and you have such a beautiful way of saying it. I've been a big fan of your writing for a little while now, and there's something about it that is incredibly calming, yet confronting in a sense, because it kind of brings out the purity of a moment and like the simplicity of a moment, comfortable or uncomfortable. But there's a spiritual side to it, in my opinion. I don't know if that's something that you do on your end on purpose, but something about it feels like it, like coming home. And I think it's because when we're able to really be in a moment and to notice the subtleties of a moment and to be with them and to accept them, that that's true spirituality in a sense. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kind of would, I'd love to talk to you about that today, just kind of where creativity and spirituality, where they intersect, because I really have been thinking about this for a lot over the past few years. Like, we have a tendency to place concepts in little boxes and let them live there instead of kind of letting them spill over to each other. Like, spirituality gets one box, and religion and meditation and yoga and blah, 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 blah. They all kind of live there. And then creativity these days looks a lot like mainstream radio or an art show or a good book or whatever, you know? And I think that when you kind of let these things live and boxes like they do, we kind of miss the true meaning of them. And there's a deeper side to each of them and a connectivity between the two. It's almost impossible to kind of have a one without the other. I have a lot that I want to talk to you about today, if you can't tell. So let's start with one thing at a time. Maya, what is creativity to you? And what does that word mean to you?
I think I'm so intrigued by this, just everything you just said, because I realize, you know, like I think some parts of creativity are really unconscious. They're unselfconscious. They're unconscious. They're they're hyperconscious. Also, there's a lot of intentionality in creativity, but there's also a loosening and a kind of softening of your, you know, the usual armor that we kind of walk through the world with. I think creativity is about letting a lot of that down. And so you become more porous to what is in the air, what is in the ether, you know, what are people carrying around? You know, it's the ability, not ability, it's really the decision. It's the decision to pay attention. the ability comes with practice. You know, the more we pay attention, the more we actually lean in, and we become more capable. We become, you know, we develop our capacity to hold what is going on around us. But creativity to me is a sort of slowing down, an intentional slowing down, and an opening and a listening. It's less about doing. It's less about, you know, I always think about writing as actually like an act of transcribing. It's less to me about what, you know, crafting something is different than what is actually sort of coming through that wants to be seen and wants to be expressed and given language to. And so the writing becomes a sort of act of transcription as opposed to a doing. It's kind of like I'm trying to put words and language and imagery
to what's
coming through. And so I think it's, I use the word porous a lot. I think when I talk about myself, I'm a pretty porous person. I'm, you know, emotionally, like, I feel like I'm a little bit of a sponge. I'm very aware of the temperature of the room and the temperature of people's, you know, kind of where they're sitting. I'm listening. I don't know. I don't know if it's something that's always been true or just something that is sort of sharpened because of being a writer or because being a human being. I mean, but I think creativity is really is about intention, it's about a decision to put down the armor and the walls and the sort of sharp corners of our self-protection and be vulnerable and be willing to be a kind of, you know, I don't know, to be a sort of a place where something will land.
Where something can come through. It's like sometimes we let so much stuff stack up inside of us. A lot of the things that build our personality, that build our ego, that sometimes it's really scary to let that stuff down and to let things come through. That's a very vulnerable place to be. It's very brave for, you know, a creative to be able to sit and kind of go there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's like two parts of it, right? Where there's the thing that we put out in the world and want to get feedback about. And there's the thing that there's the two aspects, maybe. There's the aspect of putting something out there and wanting to get feedback or feeling a sense of being seen or heard or a sense of companionship or, you know, audience or whatever. But there's also the part where we just feel the need to, this is without ego, without the need for anyone to really listen or to participate. It's just the desire to create a linkage between what you experience or what you're seeing and how to express it. So it's creating a language for what is felt, like a sensed felt experience, and transcribing it into a language, whatever the language is, whether it's paint, whether it's music, whether it's poetry. I guess that's what I see, is to do something for its own sake. It's not for the sake of what other people will think of it. And so what I carry this a lot, you know, when I'm putting work out there, it almost doesn't matter what happens to it. What matters is that I've committed to the practice and committed to paying that attention. And so I'm more attached to that, the sort of loyalty that I have for my creative practice, than I do with what happens to the work when I put it out there.
Wow. I'm sitting here listening to what you're saying, and it's just such a beautiful concept. I'm applying it to my creative process, which, you know, I was kind of telling you about before we started, where it was like, sometimes I get these moments where these songs or poems are just like downloaded into me. And it's just when I can drop that armor and remain open, when I'm not stressed out with everything in the world, that's when some of the best work comes through me, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also this other side of it. And I think maybe it's where kind of this, the spiritual side of it comes in, where it's like, I see a correlation in my healing process of trauma that I've endured, you know, as a child, or have kind of worked through my life, how I'm not be able to fully express who I am as the manifest being that I am when I let so much blockage kind of sit within me, that I'm not allowed to let my full self come through, that divine self in me come mm-hmm. through and express itself in this world. And I love what you said about how you kind of release like an outcome. You know, we all live our whole life with this outcome in mind of, oh, I have to be this, I have to be that, this is how it fits within my ego. And how you can just relax into the loyalty that you can give to yourself of moving through your process that is allowing you to be the highest expression or version of yourself. And to me, that's spirituality and creativity. I don't know. I feel like that's a little bit of an intersection there. Do you ever notice kind of a similarity between what you know as spirituality and some of your more creative moments and how they intersect?
I think that I'm going to answer this sort of in a circuitous way, if that's okay. I think that my goal, I suppose, if I have a goal about my creative work, is that I am changed by it. I am moved by it. I am altered. I am improved. I am connected. The source of the change is actually myself and not something that's coming from outside. And so, you know, I think that when I'm dialing it in, I mean, this is sort of in connection to like when we sort of cheat, when we know we're cheating, or when we're not really working at our capacity, we're not really pushing so much, but deepening. I think it's less about going pushing out than sort of deepening in, telling the truth about something, risking vulnerability. I'm more attached to, I guess I'm more attached to learning from the process and you know, like, I don't know how to say this. I guess I'm more attached to staying connected to a practice than I am with the volume of things I might create out of that practice. I think it's, where the work is going to land, or to whom it's really. I think that when I'm writing, I am trying to write as personally as possible. And it's not even so much about myself, but it's a self, the self. You know, I'm aware of an audience in mind, but it's not so much like an audience in the typical way of, I'm thinking of like an amphitheater of people. It's more of just an audience of one. I'm thinking of an audience of one, and who am I speaking to? And it's sometimes, and when the poems come in, because I relate to what you're saying about something sort of coming in, the more I loosen and become porous, the less control I need to have over what's coming in. I mean, less control I do have, but it's also the less control I feel like I need to have over how something is created. And so there's this element of surprise, because maybe something's coming in that's like, I wouldn't have said that, or I didn't you know, I don't really
totally I get that.
Like I don't really understand what I mean by that, you know, like, but it's sort of, it's either like a phrase or an image or a metaphor or something, even, you know, a line. And I just trust it. I just lean into it. And there's, I sort of give myself over to what is wanting to be, like where that's pulling me toward, I suppose. And so it's a little bit,
intuition.
I think it's sort of intuitive, but it's also surrender. There's a lot of surrender to this piece, which is, you know, sometimes, you know, like, you know, surrender can feel incredibly, like it can feel like such a relief, you know, when you finally, sometimes you just hold on so tightly to something and then it becomes impossible to manage. And then it's an incredible gift to ourselves when we just say, you know what, it's not that I give up, but I give up control. I'm letting go of whatever it is that I thought I wanted to have happen.
Sure.
And then you get surprised. You either get surprised in a great way or not a great way, but either way, there's a part of you getting nourished and fed because you're giving, you're sort of surrendering to the unknown.
Yeah. The unknown, but also there is, it feels like the unknown, right? But it also feels like surrendering to that inner wisdom, you know, is kind of the same thing.
Okay. I mean, I was going to say you're surrendering to the unknown and also surrendering to the known, which is like the known of like deep knowing, known of a, you know, the things that the heart, you know, that are not in the head, but they're in the heart. And so it's a little bit of a tug of war sometimes, because of course our head is the one directing a lot of the traffic. Like this is how this poem is going to go, or this is how this, you know, this is how this day is going to go. You know, you can fill in anything there. But yeah, the true knowing and the kind of cellular guidance, which is really, you know, it's just important to kind of remember that sometimes things are, we know something when we don't think we do.
I know. I think that's why kind of I was putting them into that same category of like the unknown and that deep wisdom. It feels unknown to us because we don't always trust ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like when you don't trust yourself, that feeling, that gut intuition or surrendering to that feels like you're surrendering to the unknown, because it's like, well, I just don't trust myself enough to give myself over to whatever that is. But it usually always comes out the right way, right? That surrender and that knowing just is like, it's always true.
It is. And I think it's good to have a lot of missteps also. I mean, this is why it's not, I don't want to erase or obscure the poems that are, to me, in retrospect, are sort of less than, or aren't like feeling as good or something. I think it's actually really important to have this sort of body of evidence of where I might have dialed it in a little, or just kind of tried to cut corners, and where I've actually really said something that has surprised me and moved me, you know.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think that we should just eliminate or erase. It's kind of like, you know, when you're in school and then you have to show your work, you know, you're doing a math problem, and part of the credit of the, you can get some credit by showing your work. I mean, even if the answer is not great.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to have that body of work where that isn't great to kind of go back to and say, okay, why wasn't that great? What did not ring true about that? Where could I have made a different choice?
Totally. Oh my gosh. The songs sitting in my catalog right now that are just, you have to write 100 terrible ones to get one good one. Oh my God. I'm so curious to know, what does your inspiration come from?
I'm a big sort of, I suppose, practitioner of the here and now. I Totally. Even though I do often look back on, you know, in my writing, I can write about things that have happened and certainly reflect on things. I am very curious about what's happening right now and what's in front of me. I think that there's a lot of, you know, this is again, sort of back to slowing down and making intentional movements of attention. It's so easy to be overwhelmed or to bypass or just kind of race through our days, our relationships, our conversations, our the things that we're even just noticing, just to race by them. And I guess, I mean, I'm just kind of curious about, I think a lot of my poems come from things that are just happening, like in the moment, or had just happened, or I'm thinking about at the moment. They're less retrospective pieces.
I noticed that. You're someone who really is a master at writing and painting a picture of the present. I took an acting class one time. I was actually in school for theater, and one of our assignments was to turn in a journal every week. And in it, we were supposed to pick some of the moments from the week before and describe them down to like the tiniest detail of that moment. And it was so hard for me, and I'm a writer, but it was so hard for me, and I never got a good grade on it because I never was present in the moment enough to be, I guess, like to be with the detail. You would think it would be so easy to just sit and write everything out that you see, but that's one thing, right? And then there's like another side of it is to actually be present in that moment and just to accept what is in that moment. And I think that a lot of us probably struggle with that. So I want to pick your brain right now and just know, like, how do you surrender to that? How do you become so aware? I mean, you already mentioned like dropping that armor, but like finding the vulnerability to do that. And I mean, that's a spiritual practice in itself.
Well, I want to backtrack just for a second and say something about the, I'm just thinking about a writing retreat I went on when I was probably one of my very first writing retreats when I was about 30. And one of the parts of the retreat was that I think she called it the facilitator, Dina Metzger. It was a dream circle. In the morning, we would gather and tell our dreams that we had the night before. Mm-hmm. And one of the instructions she gave was to tell the dream in the present tense as if it was just happening right now. And so when people recounted the dream, instead of saying, I was walking through these rooms and blah, blah, blah. I am walking through a room. I'm seeing my father. I'm, you know, picking up an instrument. I'm noticing, you know, the moon rise, or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, just even changing verb tense like that is incredibly powerful. It places you in the now, just naturally, you know, I am, I see, I think the vulnerability probably also that's connected, which is that there's an ownership over that. You know, when you say I am, it sounds so different than I was.
Totally. You know? Totally shifts it. It brings you back into control almost.
Yes. And fullness. And identity.
Yeah. Maybe not control's the word, but fullness. Yeah.
The fullness of identity. And it's not just I am, but, you know, I wish, or I, whatever the action is, it's a kind of ownership of what's happening. And maybe, you know, maybe that's a vulnerable thing, but no, it's also incontestable. You know, when you say I am feeling such and such, or I see such and such, it's actually incontestable. Nobody can say, you're not seeing that.
Right.
You're not feeling that. So there's a lot of freedom and authority in shifting our verb tenses even just to how it is right now.
I love that so much. I mean, just like in my own personal life, I'm just like, oh, I get so far out of control with living in the past and saying, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that, or I should be doing this, I should be doing that. And I mean, even just talking about it, I feel my anxiety welling up in my chest, you know? And you just, oh, you can get so down a rabbit hole with that. And I just love the idea of the practice of coming back to the I am. I'm in a room. I'm not in the past. I'm not in the future.
Right.
I'm sitting in a room. I'm sitting on a pillow talking to Maya. You know what I mean? Like, this is the moment that I'm in, and this is the moment that I can control. I just love that idea.
It's practice. Actually, it's free of judgment. It's free of self-judgment, especially, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, it, which is a practice, because we, of course, we layer on our existence with shoulds and must and wish. And I should have, and I didn't. And, you know, like this regret or this shame or, you know, pick your noun, but all of the above. Yeah. But it's kind of like a, I don't know. I've been using this image lately in some of my writing classes of, you know, the game Jenga.
Yes, I love Jenga. So fun.
You've got this tower of blocks. And, you know, the object is to remove as many blocks without collapsing the structure.
Yeah.
And I think it's been such an apt metaphor for editing, you know, like if you edit, you know, how do you edit your work? Well, what can you take away? Like, what's actually extraneous and not really necessary for the actual spine of a piece, like this actual structure of a piece to hold itself together.
Yeah.
And I also think that can be a very apt metaphor for just personal expression. How do we move through the world? Like, what is actually like holding this up? And there's a lot of things that we layer on and add and kind of think that, you know, we sort of, you know, buffer ourselves with and, you know, protect ourselves with, but we don't really need them to exist in the way we need to. Right.
Right.
So, you know, what are we sort of packing on? And that's actually just weight. It's just bulk. What are we carrying that isn't essential and isn't really helping anything?
Absolutely.
It's just actually kind of making us, it's occupying space, but it's not really occupying vital space.
Totally. And when you clear that space, oh my gosh, the room, right?
Right.
The room for more things to move in and more opportunity, more of the good to kind of fill it up. I love that. Beautiful. I love all of your insights on this. I'm sitting here just like soaking them all in. What is, when you feel like you got something, like I got, oh my gosh, this beautiful poem or whatever, what does that inspiration feel like to you?
I usually cry. I usually, there's a kind of dropping down into my, like, I just feel the softening, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a weird thing to say, but about your own work that it makes you cry, but it's actually to me like a really good barometer for how much I've actually given to something, like how much I've given over to it, because it actually has come back to me in this very body centered, you know, soulful way. So I know, you know, it's, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, which is why that's actually a good thing, because I think I would probably be a mess if everything I made like brought me tears. But it's
so
actually
emotional.
I know, but it's actually like a really, I feel that's a very spiritual, I would say, if anything is spiritual about the practice of writing for me, it's that moment when I I've taken my own breath away. And I'm just, you know, I've peeled everything back and here I am. Just
so it feels feeling present. Does it feel like freeing? Does it feel like you've let something go?
Yeah, I think there's some catharsis to it, I suppose. Yeah. But there's also deep connection, and it's deep connection to things that I can't possibly know about. You know, it's maybe deep connection to, you know, sometimes the poems that hit me the most are, I don't even know where they came from, but maybe I'll get a response from somebody who said, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I'm going through. And I'm thinking, wow, maybe I'm really writing on behalf of someone else sometimes.
Yeah, like you're picking
up. And maybe that's why it hits me emotionally and in the soft places. I'm actually writing on behalf of someone else and I'm feeling their experience. And I'm putting language to something that they couldn't or wouldn't or didn't. And so it's like a profound connection to another person who I don't even necessarily even know, but, and it's not that I, you know, always get responses back. It's just more like when I'm affected by something I've written, I kind of get this feeling like someone else is responsible for this. Someone else has been sourced, you know, for this piece.
Oh my gosh. That's just a great example too, of just the connectivity in all of us. You know what I mean? I love Elizabeth Gilbert. Did you read Big Magic by her?
I haven't read it. So I have, but yeah, it's on my list now.
She talks about how ideas and feelings like that are just kind of out there in this ether. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're open and you're able to let yourself be open and put that armor down, like you talk about, you know, they were able to grab them and were able to take these ideas and were able to bring them forth. And she was talking about this story about how she had this idea for this one book and she kept putting it aside, but she took the idea, she grabbed the idea, put it in a drawer, didn't touch it for a while, randomly met this other author woman. And it was like a very specific idea about like a person in like some foreign country. It was like very specific. Mm-hmm. She ends up randomly meeting this other woman and they were writing the same book, basically. Mm. And just the connectivity and just like this ether and just how, you know, that space, it was beautiful just seeing the connectivity of it all. So I totally believe that you could be connecting to, or I could be connecting to, even writing a song, somebody else, and letting that come forth in a way that they wouldn't be able to say it or sing it or feel it. I love that idea. It's beautiful. Yeah.
And it's something that I really encourage people, other writers or other, you know, people who are wanting to write or create, you know, have a more of a creative practice, to think about that as, you know, as a way of freeing their own creativity. You know, like if you imagine that you're speaking on behalf of someone else, it actually takes so much of the pressure away from doing it right or getting it perfectly, or even, I think, even some of the vulnerability. It kind of addresses the vulnerability because you're actually aligning with another person. There's a great sense of company and you know, and connection there. But like, what if we really believed that when we're putting something out into the world, we're doing it because somebody else can't do it for themselves, and we're doing it for them, we're helping them. And wouldn't it free us from second guessing so much of our efforts, like or perfecting or refining or, you know, a lot of the times we just inhibit ourselves from doing that because
we overthink
it, afraid of being judged. But it's like, what if, you know, if you knew that you were really speaking on behalf of someone else, or you were helping someone, or you were giving voice to something, that was unspeakable just by somebody else. I mean, imagine all the things that could be shared.
Absolutely. It makes me want to go back through all my songs that I've been overthinking for years. I mean, they sit there and just let them be what they are, you know, just like put them out. Cause I just sit and judge them all the time. But there's a poem of yours that I love. And I think it was a part of your 10 Line Tuesdays, I believe, which I'm going to totally do a shameless plug here and just tell you guys, everyone listening right now, you should absolutely go sign up for Maya's mailing list, and you'll get a 10 line poem from her each week. And they're always so awesome. They're so good. And you can do that by going to her website, www.mayastein.com. And you can take writing courses with her. You can read some of her other poetry. You can work one-on-one with her. That's right. Right. They can
do all of those things. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, amazing. But anyway, this poem that I'm speaking of, it's called Go. And I just thought it was so beautiful. And before I make any more comments on it, I thought it would be such an honor if you could read that to us, if you would feel comfortable doing that.
I'm happy to.
Oh my gosh.
I'm happy to. So I'll just maybe preface this by saying, most of my 10 Line Tuesdays come with photographs that I take. And a lot of the times my poems are actually inspired by photographs or by imagery or, you know, things that I'm looking at. So I always try to pair the poem with something that I've seen. Mm-hmm. And the photograph that went with this poem, this was back in June of this summer, was this old beat up RV that I found in like a junkyard that I was just walking, probably trespassing, but you know, so there's this picture of the RV. And it just reminds me of road trips and, you know, adventure and wanderlust and all these things. And so that's where this poem came from, that feeling of just, you know, the freedom of just going somewhere. Yeah. So this is called Go. Not because someone is nipping at your heels or the warranty's running out. Not because darkness is advancing or the water is rising, or your life is on some knife's edge, blading itself thin. Let it not be recklessness. Let it not be throwing in the towel. Let it not be escape. Let it be the marriage of tire and asphalt, of line and arrow, of that place on the dial that makes you forget where you came from or where you were going. And you find yourself drifting forward on some unnameable road and realize your whole body is humming.
I love that so much. I literally have full body chills. I've read that over and over again. Like, I'm not even kidding. I love the idea of the body hum. I first of all, thank you so much for reading that on here. That was really cool. But I have so many things that come up in me when I hear this poem. And I think art is so cool because it can transport one person to a completely different place than it can for another person. So I love to hear, you know, that yours came from the beat up van, you know, because it brought up something totally different in me. And I assume that's just because we all filter it through our experiences and our circumstances or whatever. And I think that that's, you know, spiritual in its own sense. But this poem, it brings me to the meditative moments in my life that I have sometimes when I question myself, you know, where I'm headed in life and which direction I should go. And I think it's really important to get quiet in those moments and to become, you know, very self-aware and really feel how things are sitting in your body. And I feel like this poem is a conversation that I have with myself in my head of questioning and asking myself why I'm making a move. What is my intention behind this or that? And, you know, the poem goes through this scenario and that scenario and kind of holding us accountable to the intention behind the reason to go or move. And the final line is, and you realize your whole body is humming. And it just brings me back to the whole purpose of this podcast, why I love what I do so much in music. It's just living a higher vibrational lifestyle that, you know, and always following that path of that inspiration, that feeling that you get in your stomach, those tears, the path of following growth and expansion and love and wonder and gratitude and freedom, and aligning with those things in life that truly make your body hum. And we all know that feeling and the things that make us vibrate in alignment with the truth of all that we are, which is that pure vibration and frequency and divinity and love. It's that deep spiritual body hum is pure inspiration. It is creativity. It's that at its finest, and it allows us to go out and create a beautiful experience for ourselves and for those around us. And I think that vibration is contagious, you know?
I love that, Courtney, that this really does come full circle. I mean, the humming and the vibration and doing the vibration comes, the humming comes out of being in alignment with who we are, you know, with what actually at our source, at our core. And I'll say too that, you know, as I write anything, you know, there is a sort of, you know, it starts off as being about one thing, and then it moves into being about sort of something beyond that thing. And I think that that's exactly what you're speaking to. And that ultimately, you know, the idea of a sort of road trip or, you know, wanderlust is sort of at the source, like that was sort of the inspiration of this poem. But ultimately it's about in alignment with only what is mattering.
What matters, yes.
What is really mattering, and not what is pushing or pulling, you know, not what's nipping at your heels, not what you just, not, it's not escape. You know, this marriage of tire and asphalt, of line and arrow, it's about placing ourselves with our purpose. What's our purpose? And when we are doing the thing that feels, that's at our core, that's our purpose, we do vibrate.
Totally. That we all know that feeling when we're doing something we love. We felt it as kids a lot, you know, mm-hmm. when we were in that very playful state, you know. And then there's that other side of it. It's like when we can let ourselves live in that state, keep ourselves in that state. You know, I talked to a girl, she was a sound therapist. Her name's Lisa Schuster. And she was talking about when you put two tuning forks together, that they're vibrating at different frequencies, but when you put them together, they end up aligning with each other and meeting a new mm-hmm. frequency. And I think that's kind of what we're all doing. Like, we as vibrational beings are kind of meeting other vibrational beings, and we all have the ability to raise each other up in consciousness when we allow ourselves to follow that body hum, to be in that hum, and to be in that inspiration, and making a conscious choice to create and align and be more intentional with our lives. And I think that's just a really beautiful concept. And to me, just another aspect of the intersection between spirituality and creativity.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. I love that we've sort of come here, like we've circled back and come here again. And absolutely. You know, I think the other piece is when we're humming, we also invite other people to find their hum. And yes. it doesn't need to look like ours. We will be alongside doing the thing that we're doing, and it can coexist. So we just, you know, I think that's the other piece is wanting to make these poems like invitations. I think that's at the core of what is my sort of purpose in putting them out there is a kind of invitation.
Absolutely. Maya, thank you so much for this beautiful conversation. You have been such a gift to talk to, and you read your poem. I feel like that's really cool. I'm just still really excited about that. So thank you so much for doing that.
I love talking to you, Courtney.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the Love Freak Podcast. If you like what you heard, hit that subscribe button. You can also follow this podcast on Instagram at @thelovefreak_. Don't forget, that's F-R-E-Q. Or if you'd like to find out more information, you can go to www.courtneycolemusic.com. Look for a new episode every other Tuesday.